This is 69 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. This is a special edition of the podcast, which I'm pretty much whacking together myself in the wake of running around the NRF show last week in New York. I had my handy little Tascam recorder with me, so I grabbed some quick interviews with several companies I bumped into, with the idea of stitching them together in a roundup. These are not the biggest companies there, not necessarily the hottest stuff on the show floor, but they caught my eye for one reason or another. Or in the case of the first interview, it reflects my thinking that I wanted to know more, and readers probably did. Normally, I get interviews properly smoothed out by my sound engineer guy. But with four interviews and an intro and so on, it was a big ask on short notice. So here I am, fiddling around with Audacity's audio software. This will be a bit rougher than normal, but the content will be solid. This podcast, as always, is gratefully supported by ScreenFeed, which makes brilliant subscription content for digital signage networks. All right, first, a bit of a roundup on NRF. It's a retail tech show I go to every couple of years or so. The 2019 version was seriously busy, and I'd imagine if you were in retail operations and handle things like payment processing and checkouts, this is the show. But for digital signage, not so much. There's a lot of stuff at NRF that's completely unrelated. You're going to see thermal printers, all kinds of things where you're wondering, why am I here? But companies that sell display tech into retail get a target-rich environment of retail decision makers. So there were a fair number of people showing, and many more kind of drifting around, networking, dropping off cards, just generally trying to meet people. By far, the most pervasive tech on the show floor was analytics. Everywhere you turned, there was analytics. And there were a lot more robots, but useful robotics, as opposed to those gimmicky humanoid things like the little pepper guy. I also noticed way more electronic shelf labels, which is why I stopped to chat with Rob Crane, the head of global sales for the ESL company Altair.
Is it Altair?
It's Altair.
Altair, yeah. Where are you based?
Actually an Amagramma retailer. We're based in San Jose, California.
Okay.
But we also have offices in India and Paris, in France.
Is that where it comes from originally, Paris?
And in China. No, actually it originated in the U.S. in San Jose.
Oh, okay.
I know Altair sounds French, but it's actually not.
It sounds very.
Founded in Silicon Valley 12 years ago and have been here ever since.
Okay. Are you a manufacturer or a reseller?
So we manufacture, but we don't own the manufacturing capacity. We source all of our components. We manufacture our own chip, which is unique in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Most people buy third-party chips, and we manufacture them through our supply chain partners.
Okay. So the e-paper itself, that's from e-ink or a company like that?
Yeah, so e-ink actually make the film, and then e-ink have licensed manufacturers, and our supply chain partner is called Weifeng, and they are one of e-ink's licensed manufacturers of the e-ink module. So e-ink actually manufacture the film, and then the entire display module is built up by the e-ink's licensed manufacturers, of which there are two major ones, Holotech and Weifeng, or Weifeng, or our partner.
Okay. I travel a lot. I've been to lots of other parts of the world, seen electronic shelf labels in supermarkets, liquor stores, all kinds of places.
Yeah.
Literally, the only place I've ever seen them in the U.S. is Kohl's.
Right.
And they were god-awful looking things from about 3 years ago or something. Why hasn't it happened in North America? And based on what I'm seeing here at NRF, it's all over the place, so it seems to be like ready to happen.
So Kohl's are very unique in terms of how they merchandise. Kohl's do intraday promotions, and they have 5 o'clock sales, and Kohl's realized that they wouldn't be able to do that without electronic signage. They've been our customer for 8 years, so there are signs that are in the Kohl's stores. They are largely our LCD product, not the newer e-paper product.
Okay. They're monochromatic, and they're hard to see and everything.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think Kohl's, they're an earlier version of our product, but they're very effective, and I think, you know, Kohl's would tell you that they save a significant amount of dollars in labor every month, but the real value is in enabling them to execute their merchandising strategy. And when you look at that sector of retail in North America, you know, a dollar of revenue at Kohl's is worth 20 times a dollar of revenue at JCPenney when you correlate it to market cap. And I think that's because the market understands that Kohl's has a very unique and innovative strategy around merchandising. ESL is a small piece of how we help them execute that.
Okay. And
but the reason it hasn't tipped in North America, which is what you really asked me, rather than Kohl's, is you know, there's typically an equation between the cost of labor that you replace and the cost of the technology. And for the past, you know, 10 years, the technology's been coming down in price, and you know, the correlation's been, you know, the labor costs have been going up. You know, things like in Canada this year, for example, new regulation came in from the Canadian government, which increased the burden on the employer by about 25%. All of a sudden, associate labor in the store became much more expensive, and Canadian retailers started to look at how they can automate things like
pricing. You mean in Ontario, where the minimum wage went up by...
Yeah, and I think there was something nationwide in Canada that happened as well that put a heavier burden on the employers, okay. Where not just minimum wage going up, but also the employer's contribution for the employee that they have to make went up by about 25%,
right, okay.
I think. So it's always been that correlation, and in the U.S., you know, you look at the minimum wage in California versus Mississippi, it's this huge disparity. So retailers in Canada and California have been quicker to look at ESL because that part of the equation for them is much higher. But honestly, I think ESL vendors, you know, we like to think that we're unique because of our differentiated infrastructure, right? So we have a proprietary wireless protocol that can update a lot of signs very quickly that works better than just the normal vanilla Zigbee, which is what most of our competition use. That's why we manufacture our own chip and don't buy it from a third party. I think if you use the ESL as a hub for what we call a connected store, and it drives value propositions above and beyond just simply replacing labor, it will be a lot easier for retailers to adopt, and it will make a lot more sense. So that's why we have this concept of connected store. The other piece of the equation is just simply that once the industry hits critical mass and there's enough volume in the supply chain, it begins this virtuous cycle of, you know, price and cost, right? So price goes down, therefore volume goes up, price comes down, and then it becomes much easier for retailers to adopt. And our expectation is this year that the price of an ESL will be drastically reduced because of increasing volume in the supply chain, and as a result we're going to see a lot more adoption throughout North America and in other markets where historically the barrier to entry would have been price, and that problem will be solved.
I've heard one of the arguments against ESLs, or the reason why it hasn't happened, is when you're going into like a hypermarket kind of store, mass merch store in the U.S., you're talking about 250,000 square feet or something like that, and a whole bunch of ESLs, and even though they may only be $5 or $6 or $7 or whatever it is, that's
a big number.
The multiple is a big number.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So, you know, however, in France, where the hypermarkets are every bit as big and the stores are just as large, you know, our biggest customer in Europe is the Leclerc movement through their IT services arm, Amphamil, and recently took some retailers from North America to visit their store in Paris. They have the only hypermarket inside the periphery, which is the Ring Road in Paris, and they've just upgraded everything in the store, including Altia labels, e-paper labels, throughout the whole store. I asked the store owner, because the Leclerc stores are all independently owned, David Thibault, I asked him, you know, how do you evaluate the business case and the ROI for putting these labels in? And his answer was, well, we don't even think about it anymore. Leclerc's value prop in the French grocery market is that they're never knowingly undersold. They're doing the equivalent of what Walmart does with everyday low price, right? And he said, if we're going to compete on price that way, we can't possibly do that with paper labels. We just couldn't. I couldn't even hire enough people to do it, even if I wanted to. And if I did, the cost would be so far above and beyond. So it almost, you know, they don't even think about, is there an ROI for this? They're just, you know, we have to do this because we compete on price.
Right.
And what we see is when customers adopt this, they change price way more often than they did with paper. But they never evaluate that volume of price changes in the labor equation because you couldn't possibly do it with paper.
Right. Now, I'm looking at these shelf tags, and they have flashing lights. Is that an inventory thing, or why are they flashing?
So the flashing light can be activated by any number of triggers. You know, the use cases for it typically are associate-based. If you think about associates having to locate an item for buy online, pick up in store, curbside delivery, and ship from store, you know, all of our customers are increasingly selling more through those kinds of channels.
Yeah.
In grocery, we're seeing a huge increase in Instacart, for example, coming in and picking from the store, grocery delivery. So the use cases are there for that. Actually, though, we have a better solution for helping associates and shoppers locate items in store. Part of our infrastructure includes an augmented reality application, which you'll see here on the screen in a few minutes, and I'll send you the YouTube to this whole video. But you'll see, you know, a shopper searching for an item and being able to physically navigate the store. In addition to that, that delivers heat maps and shopper tracking capabilities to the retailer, which enable them to do a lot of the things that you can do very well online, but not so much in a physical store, like retargeting and remarketing. And we think that's the best solution to enable, you know, associates to find items in a store and help locate them. But you can do that with the flashing LED light as well.
Right.
We also enable our tags with NFC near-field communication, which is typically the technology used for Apple Pay and things like that. It's a shortwave radio burst that can communicate a URL or a series of commands through an NDEF record to a user's mobile phone. We've enabled our tags actually to have those records be modified by our software remotely. So typically the way you update an NFC record is with a handheld device, somebody walking up to it, but we can actually do it over the wire. So the possibilities become endless. As a retailer, you know, we think that in the long run, retailers will actually monetize that by selling the right to promote items from their shelf edge to brands. And ultimately could end up with the equivalent of like an AdWord. You know, I know that, hey, David walked into the store, he usually buys a particular brand of beer, so I'm going to target him with a promotion. And I can activate that at the shelf edge, or I can activate that through the shopper's app. Once I know, this is the augmented reality thing working in our sneaker store in Brooklyn, by the way. So, you know, we think that connecting with the shopper in the aisle at the point where they make a decision through this channel of ESL is where retailers are really going to drive the value far above and beyond just simply saving labor on price changes.
Are there still technical issues at all with ESLs, or is that pretty much bedded down technology? It looks okay?
It's very, very mature technology. I mean, we have folks that have been running these for 5 and 6 years in grocery stores in France at great scale, making 3 changes to the screen every day and updating them with high degree of frequency, and the technology now is rock solid. Now, we have a unique infrastructure. I know from experience that some of our, you know, some of the other players in the market do have problems when they try to run large volumes of updates on many, many labels on a vanilla Zigbee network, because it's really not what it's geared for. That's why we invested so heavily in our infrastructure, so that it would support.
You just can't run enough threads at once to push it out to every...
Yeah, I mean, a Walmart Supercenter has 140,000 items. A Target has over 100,000 items, right? For us, that would require maybe 3 or 4 of our access points to update the entire store, and we'd be able to do it in a very short window. If you tried to do that with infrared, you'd need thousands of access points in the store. To do it with Zigbee, you'd need probably hundreds.
Right.
So, you know, that's important to retailers. Every retailer is trying to pull hardware out of the store, do more in the cloud, and not have to maintain and support, you know, items. So I think that's important for the retailers.
So one of the things that's kind of bubbled up in the last couple of years, and I really see it around the NRF floor this year, are LCD strips.
Yeah.
Kind of taking the same real estate, so to speak, as an ESL.
Yeah.
Does that have legs, or I just look at retailers and think, yeah, maybe on an end cap, but I don't see mass adoption of these. It's too expensive.
It's not really a viable solution for the entire store where that's being deployed in stores, and you can see them in Walmart. Hershey put them in Walmart stores, for example. Right, it's really where the brand brings their trade dollars to bear, and putting those inside the store.
And it's going
to
be the brand that's
going
to make that investment.
It's
going to
be the brands that have the longer dollar that can afford to make those kinds of investment. Now, we have a partnership with a company called Motion Display, who do amazing signage for brands. I can show you some examples that are live in our Rhyme concept store in Brooklyn right now, sourced from brands like Adidas and Nike. And Motion Display have done some very, very good research on the best way to attract a shopper's attention. And it turns out it's not with video and with those wired shelves. The motion displays actually have a much better solution. There's some quite good science research by a university in Sweden on this that I'll share with you that's very interesting. We deploy those very successfully, and we're partnered, you know, closely with Motion Display, because we think ultimately this should be a media channel in the store, and our infrastructure will glue it all together, whether it's an in-source promotional sign from a brand or it's the retailer's own pricing sign on the shelf. They can all run off the same infrastructure. And they can connect with the shopper in the same way. You know, brands cry out for data about the end user of their products.
Yeah.
And they typically get it in a very delayed fashion from the retailer and in a very sort of non-granular way. If I can capture a shopper at their point of decision and get feedback from them on my product, that has infinite value to brands. And I think we'll see brands transition their trade spend away from the traditional media channels into these in-store channels as they become available to them.
Do you suffer at all or struggle with how... In retail merchandising, you've got very large displays, you've got direct view LED displays, you've got giant LCD screens and everything else, and you have retailers and merchandisers with big bug eyes when they're walking around this show, and they're attracted to that versus these little screens that probably are a lot more important in a store but aren't taken as seriously.
Yeah, I think in grocery, for example, you have a lot of grocers where they have a color scheme, right, that defines their merchandising strategy. So, you know, one of our friends that we've had some conversations with in the Midwest have this three color scheme that they use for the nature of the deal on each product. And the e-ink screens are, they only come in red, black, and white, or red, black, and yellow.
Yeah.
And that's it. Now, e-ink are innovating constantly, and they're building, you know, full color versions of the screens, but the cost is going to end up being prohibitive for the majority of them. We are able to do some things with colored film overlays that look akin to shelf talkers and solve those kind of problems for our customers. But ultimately, you know, there's a big difference between the visual merchandising that brands do to promote inside the store and a price label. You know,
this is store ops, really.
Yeah. This is much more store ops as opposed to merchandising. But this connection with the shopper that we can enable, we think, is vitally important to merchants. And if you ask any merchant, grocery or power or wherever it is, what's the number one problem they would love to solve in terms of marketing? It's, I want to connect to the shopper at the right time.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you ever shop a Walgreens store, but if you go into a Walgreens store at the end of it, you get this huge long list of coupons, right? And if you read the coupons, they're actually extremely intelligently merchandised items. And, you know, I happen to know the lady who developed that whole AI platform, and it's an extremely good, you know, world-class AI marketing capability that when I put it on a website, right, because I'm there at the point of decision, it's extremely powerful.
Yeah.
The problem is, you know, in a Walgreens store today, I can't get that to you until after you've checked out, which is too late. And who really remembers to bring the coupon back with them? Nobody, right? Yeah. But if that were inside my app and I could promote that item to you before you get to the checkout, I could increase your basket size drastically. That's something that all merchants are really interested in. I think with NFC and with our locationing capabilities integrated with the ESL, that's where marketers and merchants really start to get excited about this. It's not just reducing labor for store ops. Now it's a channel for me to connect with my shopper, and that's what all merchants want to do.
Does the form factor matter? Like, you've got over there something that's, I don't know, 3x3 versus a 1x2.5 or something tagged. Does a bigger one work better?
It tends to be horses for courses, right? So we have, you know, pharmacy use cases where the items are very narrowly on the shelves, and we use the smallest 1.5 for those. The standard is really the 2x2.10, so 2.1 inch horizontally, which is the majority of these ones that you see on the shelves.
Okay.
But there are bigger versions as well. So for things like appliances, for example, the larger tags are very effective because there's much more product information I want to put on there.
Right.
You know, and they come in, you know, a 2.9 size, which is good for, you know, which is more a large grocery tag.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also, you know, come in a 4.2, a 5.8, a 7.5, and a 12 inch.
Right.
So it really is just determined by the use case and the kind of item and how much information I want to display about that item. But now I can activate the NFC and QR codes. I can, you know, tap into the shopper's mobile device and deliver product information promotions to them live at the shelf edge.
Right. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Nice to meet you.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit screenfeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
I bumped into Tomer Mann from 22 Miles outside the Intel booth. He was doing stand-up demos of his company's long-running wayfinding platform. That part's well established, but I was interested in what the company was doing in retail using HTML.
All right, I'm here with Tomer from 22 Miles. You're at the Intel booth, and this is new. You've got something that's point-of-sale based. I know you guys primarily is mapping and wayfinding and so on, but this is different.
Yeah, this is kind of taking it to the next level where we're now trying to get into the mobile experience, and we found out that a lot of clients don't want to download an app. They're like, well, what's the other option? And we kind of decided that let's utilize our HTML solution that we now created and do what we call a carry to mobile, where now on any interactive experience, on any digital experience, you can have a QR code, you can have a text customized option, you can have RFID NFC capabilities,
right,
and you can take the experience on a web browser. So there's nothing to download, nothing to install, and it could be a POS integration for self-service. You can finish your transaction on the web app, And we've had a lot of different kind of merchants and
you're not providing the payment gateway or any of that?
No. We're just integrating.
Okay.
So it basically ends up being an open API of full interactive app design through an HTML solution.
All right. So if you have a supermarket operator, something like that, they would just, the way this would work, it would use their API call. All their SKUs, throw them onto an interactive directory, and then be able to pull that, throw it onto a mobile device.
Through pure HTML, so they can scan for each product. Let's say they can scan the entire interface. So there's different levels of that we can push, and each one will be basically a hyperlink that creates that HTML5 experience that still feels like a whole app. But no installation needed.
Would this aim more towards the smaller operator who wouldn't have an app, or could be a large operator who has an app but isn't getting the downloads that they want?
We're seeing both options available. Okay. We've got, at this show at NRF, we actually had large operators from very big name banks to big name fast food franchisees that can't get people to download their app, especially millennials, kind of are done with all of that, and this is what I call the gateway to that scenario, where we can tease them with enough feature sets, enough design elements, and say, you want more, now download the full app. And these big merchants, big commercial companies like that fact that this could be that first touch point to then push them to a full SDK download.
Well, why would they do that through 22 Miles versus some company that specializes in web apps?
I think right now we're the only solution, from what I've done research and our engineers, that allows any novice user or any client to be able to custom design their own HTML app through our CMS, just like they would a digital signage screen, just like they would a video wall, just like they would a touchscreen or interactive wayfinding. They have 100% editable drag and drop capabilities of an HTML solution.
So instead of engaging some web to mobile agency,
no more of that.
Charge them $100,000 or God knows what. They can
do this for like
CMS.
$15 a month almost.
It's a little cheaper. So is this a pivot for you guys, or just like an extension of what you do?
It's a little bit of both. We're seeing everyone asking about the HTML5 and getting into that, so it's a little bit of a pivot, but we don't want to get away from our Intel capabilities, our Windows capabilities, our Android, all of that, but we're seeing this as kind of an added capability, but people are asking this as a standalone. So it's a little mosh-posh of it all.
Mm-hmm. Where are things with wayfinding and digital signage now? It's been around. Mapping on screens has been around for a long time. So where are we at with that in terms of adoption rates? Is it kind of matured now? Most malls, there's a mall waiting to talk here. Are most malls already doing this, or is there still a lot of potential?
No, actually, malls right now, we're finding out, don't want a downloaded app. They're like, no, we're not going to get regular guests coming in to download a full app. So the HTML solution, and that's one of the reasons we thought about this idea, is malls actually were the ones complaining that they don't want a full app. They're not getting what they want. They spent hundreds of thousands developing this app, and it's been unsuccessful for them. So this is that new option that they actually are resonating with, and we're getting a lot of malls, even the big names like Westfields and stuff, are kind of like, oh, okay, this makes more sense for us.
Mm. Are you starting to see it as well on things like educational campuses and work campuses?
Yep. We work with some education and healthcare and airports. Airports as well are like, we're not going to get a traveler coming in to download a whole app and find that. So we need to promote our concessions. We want them to find their gate, and we want something that's web-based. And so we've created that.
But what about the large screen? I'm more curious about the presence of large interactive touchscreens like this or that kind of thing.
Again, so the scan of QR code is built into our interactive experience, right? It doesn't have to be. It can be on a poster board as well.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think interactive is going anywhere. I think that they might want to go a little bit more mobile. And we've actually found that some clients are doing phase one mobile, phase two interactive, after they see with the user engagement.
Okay. All right, thank you.
My pleasure.
Inside that Intel booth, I chatted with a Spanish company called Kendu that comes out of retail graphics. and has introduced a hybrid print and signage solution that uses LED animations behind a lightbox frame of print graphics, and it also uses gesture for interactivity.
Tell me what Kendu is all about.
Well, Kendu is a company that comes from the visual communication solutions for retail. We've been in the market for 20 years, and we come from the traditional SCG displays and graphic frames and light boxes, obviously.
Okay. And For retail primarily.
Yeah. Exclusively, actually. We work for the top retail brands, let's say Macy's, Disney Stores, Zara, Mango, you count it. Mm-hmm. So 2 years ago, we launched a dynamic display we call Flowbox, which is a combination of this printed graphic and back LED motion. Mm-hmm. It was super successful. We got lots of international awards. And what we are presenting today in collaboration with Intel, empowered with Intel technology, is the interactive version of this dynamic display. Mm-hmm. So what it does is that depending on the customer's movement, the display will react and will show you different effects. So you don't need any additional tool, just your hand, but just by stopping by, the display will like come up with different effects.
Right.
And we are showing it in two different executions, if you want. One is the launch of a new campaign. It's a multifunctional jacket. So it would show you how it's waterproof, fire resistant. Right. You can use it in very extreme conditions.
Just so it's almost like a touchscreen.
In a way, but you don't even have to touch it. You actually can pass your hand around and it will react.
But it's a very large format touchscreen in many respects. But for people who aren't seeing this because they're listening to it, it's a big fabric light box with an LED light layer in behind it.
That's what it is, really. Okay. So you can go, in terms of format, you can go as large as you want. Mm-hmm. It's because following the plate's grid, you can be super large in a more cost-efficient way if you want than in a digital screen. You have the high resolution comes from the printed graphic, and the motion behind, what it does, it enhances certain parts of this graphic. And it's all about the combination of this printed graphic with the back effect. Right. It's very versatile as well because you can combine real accessories, let's say hangers or shelves. You can also add the real product.
Right.
So it's still more powerful. You know, the retailers are looking also for ways to interact. Okay, communication, customer, and product, right?
So right. And it's also durable because it's fabric instead of...
It's very durable.
No LED lights that you're going to pick off because they're protected by the...
They are protected. And then updating a campaign is super easy. It's like you do it in a light box. Mm-hmm. All the retailers are used to updating their light box campaign. Mm-hmm. Just remove the fabric, put a new one.
Snaps in with Velcro.
And then remotely, you put a new animation.
Right.
And it will instantly work.
And the animation side of it, is that software that you guys have developed, or?
Actually, we have two ways of updating the content. With the interactive, it's with a software we've developed. It's quite new, it's a quite new demo. It's going to be in the market by the end of the year, so it's super, super new. For a traditional one, it can be as simple as an SD card as well. Mm-hmm. That comes with the fabric. So a lot of retailers actually prefer that, they've told us, because of the simplicity.
Yeah.
And you don't depend on Wi-Fi or, you know, internet or whatever.
And
the stores can just update, put a new effect, put a new textile, and start running a new animation. Obviously, with the interactive one, you have to control it remotely, you have to control the camera as well, give the...
Right. So what's the business argument for this versus a traditional... quote-unquote traditional LCD display or a large format LED display?
I'd say it's more...
Apart from cost for the LED.
Apart from cost, but I would say it's more immersive. And sometimes screens can be quite harsh for the customer. They're cold. Depends on your brand proposition. They can be quite technology. And they're brand conscious. That can be, you know, sustainability, or if you want to create more an environment that really... communicate a lot of information.
Right.
This is, like, I don't know, warmer, nicer, if you want, for like these large screens. And actually, we have some customers such as Zara who went very far installing a lot of LED screens, and now they're keeping certain screens in areas where people need a lot of information, but in other areas where it's more about the mood and the fashion, the fabrics, and if either it's animal print or it's, I don't know, jeans or whatever, like they are using a lot of this system because it's more about creating an ambience. So
I was curious about that because with some of the big direct view LED displays that are in stores now, like Zara's and so on, it's like you're walking by a tanning booth. It's so bright.
Yes.
It's overpowering, and it does, I tend to agree, kind of take away from the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So this is just a lot more subtle.
Yeah. And I think that in the end, it's all about combining the right displays. I think the traditional light boxes work. The LED screens work. Flowbox works. It's just finding what each display is ideal for, right?
Right.
And having this journey or this path in your retail store nicer for the customer.
Right.
It's playing out. It's, you know, it's about discovery. It's about gaming. So I think for all those types of creating these experiences, Flowbox works really well.
Are you here in North America or is the product really just in Europe right now?
We are both in North America and in Europe. We have an office in Miami and a factory in Miami, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so if people wanted to find you, they would go where online?
They can go to kendu.com, K-E-N-D-U.com.
Okay.
And if you go from the U.S., it will directly appear the Miami office.
Is it direct sales or do you go through channels?
We do direct sales so far.
Okay.
Probably in near future, we're open to distributors, but to go to other areas in the world. But so far, it's only direct sales.
And what about the fabric overlay? Is that something that you guys need to print, or do you provide the specs and a local printer could do that?
At the moment, we are printing it.
Yeah.
When we open to distributors, we'll look for mixed partnerships, and we'll have like licensed printers.
Right.
But so far, we have the printing capabilities as well, so we do it in-house.
Is that part of the business model, or is it just we know what we're doing?
It's actually both, but it's part of our business model as well, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what we are doing is also we have the creative part, and at the moment we are always researching and coming up to new, ideas.
Yeah.
And this also, we want to be more open with, you know, retailers, their own creative directors, whatever, to come up with new, we have these new ideas. But the printing side is more like our business, so we're still
doing it. Will you guys be showing at ISE, Integrated Systems Europe?
No.
No, okay.
But we will be exhibiting at Global Shock in June.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Finally, I was wandering around the Innovation Lab, which is a lot of new companies, but also companies who can't afford a full booth. I noticed people hanging around a floor display and reacting to a screen. A company that's partially Toronto, partially Berlin, has an avatar chatbot thing that uses AI to drive interactivity. 20BN's avatar seems a little gimmicky, but done well, it would be useful in spaces where there's a set of predictable questions.
The name of the company is 20BN?
20 billion neurons.
Ah, all right.
Related to the number of neurons that are...
Okay, it's not your market cap.
Would be nice. Associated with human vision.
And you said that company's been around for 3 years, based
in
Toronto and Berlin?
Yes.
And so this is an avatar. The idea for this is to do what?
Well, she could be a store greeter. She could be a product demonstrator. She could be a trainer. All kinds of various applications that involve really humans interacting with a machine.
And is it primarily geared around the idea of a big flat panel display like this, or is this meant more for the desktop?
Right now, we're targeting towards for a large panel with a computer.
Digital signage. And you were telling me that the background of this is more in training videos?
Well, part of our strength of our company is generating the training videos required to set up these kind of interactions. So when we wanted to interact with eyeglasses, we generated hundreds of thousands of training videos in 2 weeks, two specs of manipulating eyeglasses, putting them on.
So this is not training for workers. This is training the machine.
Yes.
Okay. So
training videos.
So this is part of the machine learning.
Yes, machine learning.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. That's
all right.
Yeah.
And so the idea here is this allows for interactive engagements in a retail environment, an airport, a train station, or whatever, instead of it just being push information, you get on those what I call talking flat ladies, where they just repeat the same thing over and over again. You can actually talk to this person.
Yes, you can talk to her, and you can do things too. She can react. She can watch what you're doing.
So, if I'm getting this, what am I buying?
You would be buying the actual hardware. You'd be buying configuration and customization of the interaction. That's really the big part of the whole thing. We have to set up. You have to choose what kind of actions you want her to respond to, and what you want her. You know, it's, to some extent, you need to script what interaction, what you're trying to accomplish with it.
Right. All right. So let's say in something like a mass transport terminal, like Union Station in Toronto. Somebody squirting out of there for the first time off the Pearson Express train, go like, where the hell am I now? What do I do? And so on. You could have something there that would, they'd walk up to and say, I want to go to the Royal York Hotel.
Yes.
And it would be, in theory, you'd have.
She could give you directions. You could, and if the person says, you want me to go that way, she would notice that you're asking, do you want me to go that way? Mm-hmm. And can respond in a more natural way rather than just simply touch screens or verbal stuff.
Now you've got this avatar, Millie. Is that like the avatar, or it could be whatever you need it to
customizable,
be?
Customizable, as you wish.
Sorry?
Customizable as you wish. I mean, some things are very easy. Like if you want to change the logo, you want to change your clothes, we can customize all that stuff.
It could be male, female, whatever it needs to be.
Yep.
Because Millie's voice is a little high for me.
This right now she's somewhat edgy and cuts through the noise in the show. That can all be tuned down.
Scrappy millennial.
Yes.
And you've been around for what, 3 years?
Company, yes. She's been around for about 3 months.
Ah, okay.
So,
she's mature already. She's all grown up.
We're trying.
How large is the company?
We've got about 20 people.
Uh-huh.
Half in Berlin and half in Toronto.
Okay. And where's the software dev done? Is that in Berlin?
In both places.
Both places. Sort okay. So there's it just happens to be in both.
Yes.
Okay. Where would people find you online?
20bn.com.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.